I'd like now to welcome Urmi Basu. She is the founder of New Light, which is a nonprofit that protects and educates girls, children, and women who have been affected by forced prostitution in the red light district of Kolkata, India. And I would like to welcome Maria Jose Rodriguez Cadiz, who's the executive director of Solace Crisis Treatment Center here in Santa Fe, and Zuleika, who is founder and director of the Story Dancer Project. She's an international performer and teacher based here in Santa Fe. And they will be talking along with several other panelists next Friday, the 30th of May, at 7:30 in the evening. It's a panel and an evening of discussion, stories, and presentations looking at trafficking and survival, looking for solutions, talking about stories. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
It's great to have you all here, and it should be a really very interesting evening next Friday. Urmi, let's talk about you and your work. You were featured in the film Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. You were the founder of New Light. What is New Light, and who are the young people who are there?
New Light is a project located in the red light district of Kalikat in Kolkata, one of the eastern metropolises of India. And it's a city that has about 20 million population. New Light works with the women who are in prostitution, who are survivors of trafficking, and their children. And our effort is to fight trafficking and stop intergenerational prostitution. We try to do this work by providing the young children, the women and the girls of that community, by giving them education, healthcare opportunities, income generation possibilities, and trying just to mainstream them so that the next generation is not forced into prostitution.
How did the women who you're working with come into prostitution? I mean, you talk about the word, the term is forced prostitution. Tell us some of those stories.
In our part of the world, trafficking has been going on for many years. And if we, dig into our literature or some part of history, we would know that many of the women from the villages were brought to the big cities and sold there because they were either widows or were daughters of families where there were many girls and the parents could not provide dowry, so they were sent off to the big cities. Lured into prostitution with the false promise of either job or marriage or any other different life opportunity. And in my experience of having worked with this community for the last 15 years, I have heard repeatedly that most of the women who are currently in prostitution have at some point or the other been trafficked. So they are all basically survivors of trafficking today who are engaged in prostitution.
Is economic vulnerability the largest factor that makes people vulnerable to being trafficked?
Economic vulnerability is obviously, it is the foundation, the first reason that we can identify, but then there are layers and layers of other things happening. For example, every time there is political unrest or there is a natural disaster or the crops fail, so poverty and dislocation and displacement and disasters, all of these issues actually make women in rural India or other parts, other countries of that part of the world very vulnerable, and they are very easily trafficked and sold.
How do you find them, and how do they find you, and how do you come together to get them out of that life or transitioning out of that life?
I went to a school of social work, and many years ago I had the experience of working with a group of women in prostitution in Mumbai. That was my first exposure, and I always wanted to be in some way, be just a catalyst in making some kind of change among these women, because they are truly at the bottom of the ladder in my country. We have various other dispossessed and disenfranchised people, but I have found the women are the most vulnerable in that lot. So I come to them as a sister, as somebody whose life could easily have been what theirs are. But my escape was my education. My escape was the fact that my parents understood the value of education. And that's what I want to bring to them. My job has basically been to bring hope into this community that felt completely in a hopeless and could not really look forward to a different tomorrow. And to create that aspiration and hope, that has been the job of New Light.
I imagine that a lot of what you do there is providing them not only with resources and education, but with a community with one another. I mean, I haven't obviously been there, but it seems like that community is part of what helps them to rearrange their lives.
It is, because there is a tremendous interdependence because they're isolated from mainstream society. They have to be each other's safety nets. And that's what Zuleika and I have found repeatedly through our work. When we are in a room filled with women who practically have nothing, and then they reach out and hold another woman's hand or move together and create this energy of universal support and sisterhood. I think that is something we have experienced a number of times, and that's what moving us to take our work to the next level.
What are some of the problems that they are facing? Are you dealing not only with poverty and being trafficked, but also health issues?
Yeah, we have a very, very active HIV and AIDS care program. The government of India provides antiretroviral therapy for free to all individuals who are diagnosed with HIV. But we help the women in accessing treatment, because many of them don't have any IDs. They don't have any permanent address. It's also kind of providing a civil support system. They're all just probably a millimeter away from falling through the crack. So it's a constant effort in keeping them afloat and helping them to, you know, rise and to get their lives better organized. Healthcare is a very important focus. We are also working in alternative income generation activities and providing them with skills that could help them to make the transition easier. It's never easy. When you have lived a life as a woman in prostitution for 20 years and you live your life completely on the other edge of the end of the spectrum, it's a huge task to make that transition. Also provide them with the psychosocial support, give them possibilities to see a therapist or a counselor, and small bits of things that we are trying to, you know, plug these various holes in the system.
There's also boys and young men. What is their role? They're the children of some of these women who've been trafficked, or?
Yes, unlike other parts of the world where, for example, if you go to Amsterdam or if you go to parts of Germany or Australia, you see only women and women within a certain age group engaged in prostitution. But in India, it's like it's a community. Like, you find older people, you find children, you find young boys, you find older men and women. Everybody is there. So these are boys, the children of the sex workers, and we are trying to offer them the same possibilities and opportunities as we do that to the girls. Because if we did not, they are going to be tomorrow's abusers. They will. Their only role model is that of being a pimp or a trafficker or a drug peddler or somebody who gets involved in petty crimes and theft. So it is very important to begin a dialogue with them, because our other fight is to stop gender-based violence. And unless we engage the boys in a dialogue, we'll not be able to take this forward.
Now, what problems do you face as someone who is going up against this vast, incredibly powerful, violent, and evil industry, human trafficking?
When this project was started, it did not start with a in a very clear structure, or we did not have a blueprint. Everything that the project is doing today is kind of things that we as a group have learned day by day through our experience. And we know it's a huge task. And in our entire lifetime, or maybe in the next three lifetimes of all of us, if we believe that, it is not something that will be completely abolished from the face of this earth. But that doesn't mean we don't start, we don't move. We are just taking baby steps, and one foot in front of the other, that's how we look at our path ahead.
But I mean, do you get threats? Is there retaliation against you for the work that you're doing?
At the beginning, there was, but it's really I cannot understand how in all these years nobody has walked up with a knife or a gun at me or assaulted me. But I have received secondary threats, like, why are you doing this? And in the sense, not directly from the pimps who work there, but through other network. Many people have said, oh, this is not a project that's going to last. It will, fizzle out. Many such comments. But after 15 years, I think people have realized we are not going to disappear. We are just not going to shut down and say this is an impossible task.
Now, after 15 years, you've seen a lot of people who were girls grow up. What are some of the success stories? What are some of these young women now doing?
Many of the kids were 7 or 8 years old, so they are all young adults. We have 14 girls who are at the university level. We have a girl who's just finishing her master's in social work. We have boys who are in the culinary school. We have students who are going to the Birla Institute of Technology and Sciences in New Delhi doing computer animation and graphics. So, I mean, we are moving in a very powerful and a very motivating direction with all these young people who are educated. They're first-generation learners. They're immensely confident and forward-thinking. They're kind of children from the next century, probably.
Now, Maria Jose Rodriguez Cadiz of Solis Crisis Treatment Center, what is your role and the role of Solis in the whole issue of human trafficking?
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. The Solis Crisis Treatment Center stands for 41 years in our community as the location that is designated regionally for sexual assault service provider. And we focus on the investigation and prosecution of crimes against children. We do, of course, also work with victims of violent crimes that are adults, but we are very specialized as a nationally accredited children advocacy center on crimes against children. So what we have seen at Solis is cases of youth and children that are victim of human trafficking. And we also have worked collaboratively with entities in our community that are working more directly with adult victims of human trafficking. So this problem is being conceptualized as a form of modern-day slavery. And we basically, Mary Charlotte, have two roles in our community. One is the one of bringing education and awareness, and the second one is the one of responding to the particular crime of children and youth being forced into prostitution.
What does that look like here in the state of New Mexico?
The part that a lot of people don't know is that when we speak about human trafficking, and what really that involves is the exploitation of persons for commercial sex or forced labor, plus the inability of victims to remove themselves from that situation, is that it doesn't have to involve borders. It doesn't have to involve crossing an international border. And that is one of the biggest myths that exists around the crime of human trafficking. I think for the longest time, we all thought, well, this is something that happens only internationally. And here in the United States, like in any other country, the way some of us service providers are getting to know the depth and the impact of the crime is that actually involve domestically our own youth and children and adults, basically, in how the law is written. And I can only refer to the one that we have in New Mexico that was passed in 2008. You don't have to have the crossing of a border to have that crime constitute human trafficking. So we are seeing our own youth, for instance. Think about the most vulnerable members of our youth community that could perhaps become victims of this crime. If we think about that, we all can probably say, well, you know, our runaway youth or our homeless youth, of which, unfortunately, in Santa Fe, we have a tremendous problem. And also, fortunately, we have great service providers like Adelante that work with them. But that particular type of youth who are perhaps escaping some other danger in their lives, perhaps they were victims of sexual violence or child abuse before and they have to escape their homes, have become now runaways and they are experiencing homelessness, and they are the first target for somebody that wants to commit human trafficking. They offer to that youth a sense of community. They first come to them by saying things like, we understand you, nobody does. I've been there like you, but we take care of each other. And at the very beginning, what might be sensed as a new and fresh, safe environment, it becomes little by little the slavery they see themselves in.
And I read somewhere that girls who have been sexually abused are far more vulnerable than those who haven't to being trafficked.
And, you know, it depends on how you look at it. Look at it from the point of view of where they're trying to escape, because, unfortunately, the majority of the sexual violence committed in our state, as it happens in this nation, is being committed, first of all, against youth, and second of all, to them by those who know them.
Yes.
So I'm going to go back for a second to explain that a little better. Basically, there isn't any other demographic than the one of being young to become a victim. That is the highest indicator. It's such a horrible thing to say, but basically the majority of the victims of sexual assault in our community are youth and children. That's first. Second,
yes.
The violence that is committed against them is committed by people that they know. So a lot of our youth that has been victimized by sexual violence has been victimized by those who should be caring for them in the first place. So they have to escape those places sometimes if they don't find the right support, and then they become that much more vulnerable.
Zuleika, you are a dancer, you are a storyteller, a performer, a teacher, and you are also a healer who works with women, have been working with women for a long time. What is your connection to this whole subject of human trafficking?
I was listening to Urmi and Maria Jose and you speaking so beautifully. I'm so touched by this, the trauma that people go through in these horrible situations. And I think what's happened to me is that I fell into the reality that we all come into life in a body. It's a precious way of experiencing this beautiful life. And when we experience trauma and fear and violence and the unthinkable, we shut down. And I found myself in life around so many people who have been traumatized, who have been hurt, who have been abused, that I found myself taking these simple exercises that I created, which you know about, the take-a-minute exercises, as a doorway, simple ways that can open our joints, open our breath. Nothing where you have to change your clothes or go in a fancy room, or not that those things aren't wonderful.
When you call it take a minute, it is literally a minute.
It is.
Some of these little exercises.
Well, actually, lately I've been in India this year, I was calling it take a second because we found out that when you take a second to just stretch your hands out, if you stretch your hands out in front of you just now, you'll see that everything opens up and you drop back down into a place where there's a safety inside of ourselves. So that's something that I've been doing for a long time in schools and with thousands of kids and performances and all kinds of situations. And I found myself, I met Maria Jose because the Story Dancer Project is an international artistic health resource organization dedicated to bringing core wellness and movement arts to those in the world who are challenged by life circumstances. And so we partner with other organizations. We give our programs and our time to work with counselors and victims and survivors and offenders and those in need. We give this for free as a partnership, and then that's how we work. So in Solace and Esperanza and now LifeLink, we're working inside of these organizations. I was taken to meet Urmi. I was doing a performance at the American Center in Calcutta, and they said, could we share you with some local organizations that could, that would benefit by meeting you? And I said, oh, I would love that. And I went there, and there was like, a hundred children, 50 to 100 children, and there wasn't really anyone to translate that day, so I used sound rhythm language, like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and all, it was boys and girls. And we had such a good time. We made so much noise. They asked me, would I come back? And I said, yeah. So I went back the next day. And that evening I met the people from the American Center, and they said, we were trying to call you. Where were you? And I said, well, I went back to that place with all those children. They said, you went there by yourself? So they were very shocked. And anyway, from that has come a great collaboration and partnership. And what we'll be talking about on this evening, May 30th, is a new project that we have, which is working with the mothers, the women who have been trafficked and who are in this prostitution. We are doing a project together called Kalpataru, which is the wish-fulfilling tree, where we take them out of the red light district to a beautiful studio and work with movement and relaxation and beautiful food. And as Urmi was speaking about, partnership and counsel. So that's how the Story Dancer Project is interlacing with Solace and Esperanza and New Light, where we bring in little things that can remind people to feel good in the midst of the trouble. And sometimes I think, does it matter? Should I even be doing this? Or should we do this? But when you see someone smile for 1 second, you know that there's a use for joy and that there's a healing that takes place. You mentioned the word healer. I would never say that about myself. I've never used that, but other people say it. So I think healing happens when joy enters the body, and I never knew so much that we could work with people who were in trauma in this way.
It's so interesting to me that the three of you who were talking today are dealing with these different and intertwined parts of the process of addressing trafficking and survival. I mean, you were dealing with the body and movement and sound, and Urmi, you were dealing with giving people services and a place to live and community, and Maria Jose, you were dealing also with the healing aspect of it and the legal sort of big picture of the whole thing. And all of you and so many other people in dialogue are finding all the different pieces that we hope lead to bigger solutions.
I want to say that on this panel, we're going to have representatives from Esperanza and LifeLink and the Office of the Attorney General, and Maria Jose has honorably accepted to moderate this extraordinary gathering, actually. And if people are listening and they think, well, I don't know anything about this, I guess I wouldn't go to such a thing. Actually, that's what I used to think. And I found myself in a whole new perspective that we're all human beings and our safety matters.
In one of the goals that we will hope to achieve on Friday, May 30th, is to disseminate enough information so we can break through some of the myths that have been created in the past about this horrendous crime, and allow people to rethink it again, because unfortunately it is not, trafficking networks are not just limited to urban localities. They are very much also happening in rural and remote areas, and where they actually can operate in a much more undetected way. So we all bear responsibility. We all have eyes and ears. And if we knew how to recognize some signs and symptoms and pass that along to the right professionals in the different fields, we all can truly make a tremendous difference in cutting through this horrendous crime that oftentimes is nothing but the accumulation of 10 or 12 different kind of crimes committed against the same person.
And I think it's also important to educate ourselves because, I mean, this has been said before, but I think there's a lot of truth to it, that human trafficking, the understanding of that is about where the understanding of domestic violence was in the 1950s.
Right.
It was all around and people didn't necessarily see it. And in order to recognize it and bring the conversation forward, we need to know what we're looking at.
Correct. And also, there's an aggravated factor here, and is that, well, and perhaps it was also the case when we were, well, when not me, I shouldn't put myself there, but those that paved the road to everybody today's days to be able to stand up and also disclose violence, in the past, they can probably testify to the fact that people were not self-identifying themselves as victims. That is exactly what we're also facing right now with the crime of human trafficking. Very unlikely victims are self-identifying themselves. And it takes the right bystander action, the eyes and ears that recognize symptoms to perhaps open that new day for somebody's life to change.
Urmi Basu is founder of New Light, the nonprofit that is dealing with all these issues we've been talking about in Calcutta, India. And she's featured in the documentary Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. Zuleika is founder and director of the Story Dancer Project. And Maria Jose Rodriguez Cadiz is executive director of Solace Crisis Treatment Center. And they and others will be speaking on Friday the 30th of May at the Santa Fe Women's Club at 1616 Old Pecos Trail. And everybody is welcome. There is a suggested donation, but nobody will be turned away. I want to thank you all so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Maria Charlotte.
Thank you.
Thank you, Zuleika. Thank you, Maria Jose.
Thank you, Orme, Zuleika, and Mary Charlotte.